welcome to Forum. I'm Andrew Gilligan, and this is the topical debate show where the people ask the questions. Today we're talking about our rather larger broadcasting rival, the BBC, and its often troubled relationship with politicians and governments. The right thinks the BBC is hopelessly biased towards Labour. The Labour Party has had some furious rows with the BBC, and none more furious than the one about the Iraq dossier involving me. Some people say since that time the BBC has lost its journalistic nerve. Other people point to all the scoops it's been getting lately about political scandals and the Northern Rock banking crisis. And you certainly couldn't call John Humphreys, presenter of its flagship news programme, a timid figure. So to discuss whether the BBC is or is not too close to the government, I'm joined by a distinguished panel. To my right, Matt Wells, media editor of the centre-left newspaper, The Guardian, the paper you probably read if you work in TV. That's according to my next guest, Gerald Howarth. Anyway, Gerald is a Tory MP who thinks the BBC is deeply and often unconsciously biased against the right. To my left, Martin Buckley, an investigative journalist who spent many years as a BBC correspondent. And on his left, Yvonne Ridley, a correspondent for Press TV and a member of George Galloway's Respect Party. Welcome to you all. OK. Our first question comes from Nadeem Malik, who's an academic and scientist. Nadeem Malik, your question.
Thank you, Andrew. In view of the ever-increasing number of media outlets and competition worldwide, what are the major challenges facing the BBC in the next generation, and will the BBC be able to meet these challenges if it is to maintain its iconic status as the world's most respected information source?
Matt Wells.
Well, the biggest challenge facing the BBC over the next decade or so is one of competition. When the BBC was set up 80 or so years ago, it was the only broadcaster in Britain, and it enjoyed a monopoly status for about half a century. Then along came ITV in 1955, bit of competition there, not too much. Only in the last 10 years or so, with the explosion of hundreds of channels now, does the BBC face some serious competition, both here in Britain and indeed around the world. And the BBC, of course, has global ambitions. Now, the way the BBC is funded at the moment is through a license fee. It's a tax on everyone who owns a television in Britain, and many people believe that that's an unsustainable model. Even those of us on the centre-left, as you described it, Andrew, have doubts about whether the licence fee can survive this level of competition that's been developing. Because people are just going to ask themselves, well, if I don't watch the BBC, if I don't listen to the BBC, why should I pay for it? So the challenge for the BBC is to remain relevant and to remain watched and listened to and to remain trusted. And those are all challenges that have come under some significant pressure in recent months even.
What challenges would you say face the BBC?
Well, Andrew, you know, I'm very sorry to break the mould here, but I actually think Matt's put his finger on it. I think this is the challenge that the BBC faces at the moment, that when it was set up, it was basically the only source of television news, and along came ITV. But today, there are a plethora of channels. We all watch them. And I think when you said, sir, that you thought the BBC was the kind of repository of the highest standards of impartial news gathering, I think that it now faces challenges in that direction. And indeed, during the Iraq War, there were many people who were starting to switch to Sky News from BBC, including, I think, the crew of our aircraft carrier in the Gulf, who felt that that was perhaps more on the ball. So I think the BBC does face a real challenge. And I think it is also not certain of how much it should engage in. Should it be doing everything? Should it be doing children's programs right the way through to Newsnight and all that and everything in between? I think some of the things that it does are absolutely fantastic. I think its costume drama programs, for example, are absolutely superb. I happen to be a great fan of Sir Terry Wogan. I think he lightens up my morning when I'm not forced to listen to Mr. John Humphreys or Mr. Jim Nocte. I think that some of the other things that it's trying to do, it really has got to try and, I think, concentrate on that which it does best and probably give up doing some of the things that it's currently competing directly head-to-head with not just one but a whole load of other channels.
OK, Martin Buckley, you were at the BBC for many years. How's it changed? Has it changed for the better or for the worse?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people think that the BBC has changed for the worse in recent years, because it has changed, undoubtedly. Working conditions for staff in the BBC have changed, and that's produced a lot of disgruntlement. But I still work for the BBC, incidentally, I haven't stopped. I think that the BBC I think you can break this question down into two ways. How is it responding to the technological challenges of the future? The BBC is creating integrated newsrooms at the moment, where the same journalists will produce radio and television and online news. They'll be sending news directly to your mobile phone, etc., etc. And undoubtedly, on the technological front, the BBC is coming out fighting, and it's determined to stay up there with the best. Now, you know, yes, it has to go on doing what it's always done well. Should it do everything? Should it try and do children's television? Well, no one else in Britain is doing children's television. So yes, it should go on doing that. But above all, what must it keep doing? It must keep producing the best news in the world that people trust. And I actually think that it still just about is the most trusted broadcaster in the world. I think it still has a fantastic news-gathering team. I've worked on BBC News, and I've never been leaned on to say anything that I didn't believe was true, and I don't have any colleagues who would say that they've ever been leaned on. So I think it's trusted. I think it's gone boldly into the online world via BBC Online, which is fantastically respected too all around the world and greatly used by many, many millions of people. So I don't want to be one of those old miseries who says that it's all bad news for the BBC. I think it is still doing very, very well.
Yvonne, are you quite as sanguine about the BBC?
I'm going to be one of those old miseries. The BBC no longer reflects the viewers that it has. And Jonathan Ross, its star signee, nailed it when he said the only black faces he sees, or ethnic minority people he sees in the BBC, are in the cleaning department or the canteen. They certainly, the staff, the senior staff, do not reflect the society that they now serve. And you can see this, you can hear this by switching on to John Humphreys, switch on to Newsnight, switch on to all of the flagship shows, and you see a load of white men.
Well, like Richard Shaw presenting the news on the flagship news programme in the evening, Woman's Hour, Richard Shaw, what about
Well,
that?
Obviously Woman's Hour is slightly different.
And The World Tonight, flagship international news broadcast
you know,
in the evenings.
Well, Jonathan Ross, as I say, the star signing, agrees
with me. You're simply wrong about this.
And
yeah, I agree with that. I'm bound to say, Martin, I agree with you, because I have an interesting quote here from Mr. Andrew Marr, great scion of the Beeb, former political editor, who said, amongst other things, BBC is a publicly funded urban organisation with an abnormally large proportion of younger people, of people of ethnic minorities.
In the staff canteen.
Not in the staff canteen.
Not
and
true.
I agree with Martin. I think that it's true.
And the Asia, the BBC Asia, that's been hacked back, and I understand that that's under threat now as well. It's, in fact, I think it's going to be axed.
I think this is just nonsense. I mean, the BBC, I'm not sure if you watch much of the BBC, Yvonne, because it doesn't sound like you do, but if you turn on the BBC at 6 o'clock in the evening, most watched news bulletin is presented by, you know, a highly respected, probably the BBC's most respected news presenter, George Alagaya. If you look at, if you watch Holby City, if you watch EastEnders, if you watch, you know, all the dramas and soaps and children's television programmes, plethora of faces of, you know, white, black, yellow, red, and all colours in between.
I'd just like to say that the French TV was extremely proud that it appointed its first black newscaster last year. Wow.
And they made a big thing about it.
We've had them here since the 1970s. I work myself on the BBC Asian unit for 18 months. I can tell you that the BBC works very, very actively. It doesn't always achieve what it wants.
The unit has just been axed. Well, so okay. That must be me and Jonathan Ross on our own.
Okay, let's broaden this out from the colour of people's skins at the BBC to the colour of people's political views. I mean, the persistent charge against the BBC is it is overwhelmingly liberal. And that quote that Gerald Howarth read out from Andy Marr, its own former political editor, has him backing that up. I mean, Matt, is it true or is it a canard?
Well, I mean, I just don't really understand this idea that it's some sort of liberal conspiracy, because if you speak to anybody who works in the BBC, Martin's just said, you know, nobody suggests that anybody is lent on to take any particular view, and I suppose there is, you know, in the country there is a sort of middle ground of liberal consensus that that's what got New Labour elected and kept them in power for the last, you know, 10, however many years it is. It's half a lifetime for me. But I mean, and Gerald Howarth just, you know, can snipe from the sidelines. The fact is that the BBC represents the vast majority of Middle Britain.
Excuse me, I'm not sniping from the sidelines. I happen to be an elected Member of Parliament. Mm. You haven't been elected
in
by
a minority party these days. Yeah.
We'll be the next government. You've been elected by nobody. At least I have stood for election and, you know, put my views and myself on the block.
But do you think the people of Aldershot actually reflect your views about the BBC? Do you think they think the same about the BBC as you do?
I think that people are concerned about the apparent liberal bias in the BBC. And let me just say,
but
first of all, I'll come to it. Just give me a chance,
sir.
Andrew, because I think the audience would like to hear this. Do you know where they advertise most of their jobs in? In his newspaper.
Well, they don't anymore. That's half the problem. They advertise all their jobs on bbc.co.uk, and we've lost a whole shed load of advertising revenue because of it. It's just not true anymore.
Well,
that's
encouraging to hear that that's not so you're not getting so much revenue. But the fact is that you can't find people. You cannot find people in the BBC who will end up to being conservatives. And what I think is, I do not believe that it is that they are out to. Overwhelmingly to represent a view which is not a conservative view. I would not make that accusation. The point I make is that I just genuinely believe that some of them cannot get into the minds of conservatives. And I single out one person in particular, and that is my very good friend Jim Naughty of the Today programme. I don't think Jim really understands how conservatives think. And when they approach a question, let's take, for example, trust hospitals. You all know that the Labour government set up trust hospitals. That was the idea. They'd give the local hospitals more autonomy over what they did and more money. They interview the minister and say, isn't this disgraceful? Because basically it was a sort of Tory idea. Isn't this disgraceful? Why are you doing this? Instead of saying, why are you only doing this in a modest way? Why are you just allowing a few hospitals to go down this route? Why don't you let all hospitals do it? Because that's the public sector that they come from. They're all public sector employees. The BBC is a public sector organisation.
Right.
It has a bias towards the public sector.
Let's hear some views from the audience. Anyone want to talk from the audience? Yeah, gentleman at the front there, second row.
Yes, I'd like to go back to what was discussed initially with the first question, whereby I wanted to find out if the panel believes that the BBC has a future if they were not being funded by the public purse. Because as was mentioned by one of the speakers, the organisation has been running for 80 years, and if this was a child, to have an eight-year-old child still living off of the public purse and still living at home, it seems to be a bit of anachronism in the 21st century.
Okay,
but the view of most of us is that the BBC does reflect a white male middle-class point of view and a white male middle-class agenda. Why should the rest of us have to pay for it?
Okay, Martin Buckley, you know, if we didn't have to pay for it, would we?
No, and you wouldn't have the best broadcasting organisation in the world.
What do you say to that, sir?
Which the Tories tried to destroy under Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, remember the audience who asked the question.
I don't believe that it is necessarily the best broadcaster in the world. I mean, this is usually said about British organisations only by the British. I mean, it's the same thing that's said about the police service, and it's the same thing that's said about the transport service. It's the same thing that is said about British football. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Okay, well, I can't talk about football or any of those things, but I can say that I've visited most of the countries in the world that would consider themselves to have a broadcasting system that was anything like in the realm of the BBC, and I can tell you my honest view, it's the best.
All right, Matt, you're an expert on this,
well,
tell me.
I don't know about that, but I think it's certainly the case that people in very highly paid positions, very high up at the BBC, are thinking very hard about the time when it will come, when the licence fee is abolished and the BBC has to be paid for by some other system. So large amounts of money have been spent on detailed research about how many people would pay for the BBC. And I can tell you, because I've spoken to people who've seen the research, that there are plenty of people in Britain who would pay enough money to keep the BBC going, not in the sort of huge level that it is now, but at a pretty impressive level.
Yvonne Ridley.
Well, talking about government interference, such as government might have interfered, but my goodness, the interference from this present government, a government which came in on a platform of free speech, is absolutely disgraceful.
So what you're saying, any state-funded service is inevitably, any service funded by a tax inevitably involves political interference, is what you're saying?
No, it shouldn't. And at one point, the BBC was beyond interference by governments, but this government in particular has been disgraceful in the way it is manipulated, bullied, cajoled the BBC quite clearly, and sadly the governors of the BBC have trembled and buckled under this sort of pressure.
All right.
Which I don't think they did under the Thatcher government.
Well, that brings us into our next question, actually, which is from Robin Virgin, who's a publisher. Robin, your question.
In the aftermath of the Hutton report resulting in the loss of the Director General and the Chairman, has the BBC lost its courage in reporting on the government?
Okay, yeah, Yvonne Ridley, you might as well carry on what you're saying on that.
Yes, I would say that the BBC has lost a lot of credibility. It is going to take a considerable amount of time for that to recover. And I have a lot of journalist friends within the BBC. It not only knocked them, I mean, what happened to you, Andrew, had a devastating impact across all the newsrooms with this government meddling, this government interference and bullying, and the spineless...
What specific form is it supposed to take, Yvonne?
Well, the government should not be interfering.
Ringing people up and telling them not to say things?
Of course, that is exactly what was happening. And it is absolutely disgraceful that there should be any form of censorship from politicians. And I think, you know...
Examples, please, of this alleged censorship?
Well, I think Andrew's sacking from the BBC was a classic example of government pressure for somebody who had caused great displeasure in the Blair government.
OK, Matt Wells, you saw the Hutton Inquiry. I mean, the BBC did not emerge with total credit from the Hutton Inquiry, and you know, mistakes were made on all sides.
Well, yes, and to be fair, Andrew, you know, you made mistakes. That's why you lost your job, and others did as well. And he did.
And I'm sure, was
Andrew's mistake? Andrew's mistake was to get the story wrong. I thought
that story right, actually.
The story was wrong at the time. And he didn't quote his source properly, and we all know what happened after that. I think that I don't think, frankly, that should have been something that Andrew should have lost his job for, let alone the Director General of the BBC and the Chairman as well. It was undoubtedly a cataclysmic time and a time of great crisis, and it was very serious for the BBC at the time. But I just don't think that there's any evidence, and Yvonne was just challenged and unable to produce any evidence, that...
I wasn't given a chance to produce any evidence.
So there's no suggestion. There's no suggestion that the BBC has been cowed by political pressure. I would say the BBC has been cowed by commercial pressure, you know, the dumbing down of Panorama and the, you know, all the other useless consumer programmes that they have on the BBC. That's all to do with commercial pressure. Nothing to do with political pressure.
And it's also partly to do with political pressure, because remember, it was the Conservatives who threatened to break the BBC up, and that was the time when the BBC underwent this enormous change into consumerism.
I don't think there is any direct... There is direct political pressure. I think the BBC stands up to it rather well. And Gerald Howarth was talking about how Jim Nocte, presenter of Radio 4 Today programme, is a loony, some sort of loony lefty.
Well,
I was saying was, I don't think
effect.
He... I think... Let me just put you right. Okay. I think that he has difficulty understanding the conservative mindset.
You may be right. I don't know about that. I have difficulty understanding the conservative mindset as well. But the other main presenter of the Today programme, John Humphreys, if you read his columns in the Sunday Times before they were sadly axed, I think you'd probably take a different view. That is not a man who I would characterise as being of the left. So I think undoubtedly, going back to to what the questioner was saying, that the Hutton report was a, you know, a disastrous and cataclysmic affair for the BBC, and a lot of people paid rather more dearly than they ought to have done for mistakes that plenty of us of the type that plenty of us have made over the years. But I do think the BBC has managed to pick itself up, dust itself down, and is doing pretty well.
Okay, let's go quickly to another question. We're only a short time away from the break. This is from Nimesh Shah, a related question.
Do you think the BBC is dumbing down its news service and documentary programme making?
Dumbing down?
Is it dumbing down? Well, in a sense, yes, but I don't think it's alone in this. I think that for politicians, it really is very difficult today because you are expected to go on and have a sound bite. You expect to reduce very serious issues down to one sound bite, and you have a very short space of time in which to do it. And that is, I think, very difficult. And that is partly because of the determination of the news agenda, and because there's a huge amount of competition between broadcasters, A, to get the news first, and B, to get the to get the sort of, if I can use the word, Andrew, the sort of sexiest angle on the story. And I think it does mean that there isn't the focus on issues that there should be. Now, I'd like to, again, single out the BBC a bit of praise here, if I may. And that was a programme they did on Newsnight, which they devoted exclusively to the army, the entire programme, and about whether the military covenant had been broken or not. And I thought that was a really good programme. Why? Because it actually gave the participants all a bit of time in which to develop an argument.
OK, Martin Buckley, just quickly before we break. You work for the BBC. Are you dumber than you were?
Well, some sectors have been pretty well protected of the BBC, but undoubtedly there has been a really bad dumbing down, I'm sorry to say. It's partly because the BBC is under pressure, ironically, to compete for viewers and for listeners, for numbers, with independent broadcasters, and the BBC feels somehow that it has to compete with, you know, ITV, and a strange thing is that the BBC's been whopping ITV, been getting much bigger figures. But I think that strange pressure on the BBC, which started under the Tories, and oddly has been continued by Labour, because Labour, being a democratic party of the people, also wants to see the BBC making democratic programmes, which unfortunately generally tends to mean stupid programmes in the views of a lot of cynical politicians. So yes, under both the Tories and Labour, the BBC has been under pressure to make programmes that are easier to understand. Too often it's meant that they've actually been under the intelligence level of audiences, and I just hope that this is going to change.
Hold that thought. We'll take a break now, but we're back in a few minutes for more topical discussion, and stay with us. We're discussing the BBC, and specifically we're on a question as to whether it's dumbing down or not. Matt Wells.
I think actually that parts of the BBC have dumbed down rather badly. Panorama used to be the, to take an example, used to be the flagship current affairs, is still the flagship current affairs television programme on BBC One. And recently they decided that that they needed to get more audiences. They moved the time into peak time, cut it to half an hour. Shouldn't have been too much of the problem. But if you watch the Panorama show over the past year or so, you'll have been watching a very different programme from the one you might have watched 5 years or so ago. And there was one particular, I mean, I could raise a few examples, but there's one edition they did about the so-called dangers of Wi-Fi and how it's going to frazzle the brains of kids. And they did this, you know, I was watching it at the time thinking, God, this is just a load of bollocks. They did this experiment in this school that made all these big noises, and it made it look as if Wi-Fi was going to cause cancer to all these kids in this school. And this week BBC has been forced to admit that that the show was unbalanced, that they'd misrepresented the views of several of the participants, and all to get a fancy headline. And of course, they got a few headlines in the newspapers the next day. So yes, I do think it's dumbed down, although I repeat the point that I made earlier on. I think the reason that it's dumbed down is not because of political interference, it's because of commercial reality.
Yvonne Ridley, take in the point of politicisation made by our earlier question, Robin Virgin, as well.
Well, I have to agree with Matt, and it is very hit and miss, and maybe it is commercially driven, but the panorama I'm thinking of in particular was a so-called expose on the Church of Scientology, and I'm a tabloid journalist, I'm very proud of it. And to watch John Sweeney, an excellent journalist, by the way, and a former colleague of mine, descend into such cheap tabloid tricks to try and score points over the Church of Scientology was it was shameful. And we've seen this little glimpses of this on Newsnight, which has an extremely Islamophobic agenda as well, and really it's not worthy of the BBC, and yet they will do an excellent in-depth program like the one that was mentioned before about the British Army.
Okay, let's get some views from the audience. Gentleman with the beard there, third row from the back here. Yeah.
Hi, I was wondering if I could make a point to Jerry Health, who said that
Gerald Health, that's okay.
That you cited the evidence of the crew of the British aircraft carrier during the Gulf of the Iraq War as being, so like, their switch to Sky News meant that the BBC are a bit too left-wing?
No, I wasn't making a partisan point. I was making a point about trust, that they felt, and indeed it reflected what I felt, that my family and I had decided that actually Sky was more likely to give us an accurate view of what was going on. And it's no secret that if you go to the Ministry of Defence, you will see in their headquarters not only representations of the battle space, but you will also see in one corner the Sky News with the breaking news. And that's my point, that to the gentleman here who said that the BBC had this reputation, I said it's in danger of losing that reputation. And as a Brit, I don't want it to lose that reputation. I do actually want the BBC to be successful. Martin thinks that I want to break it up. I want it to be successful. And what we have to do in this rapidly changing world, particularly in the world of broadcasting, is to make sure the BBC is successful. It may be at the end of the day that the current format where we pay for it by a compulsory tax on all of us in this room may have to change. I don't know.
Okay, another point. A gentleman in the second row there, yeah, with the moustache, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, actually this leads onto the previous debate about license fees. Surely the point of the license fee was precisely to free the BBC from competition, because if you take away the license fee, it'll be competing directly in the way that it's been described. So what alternative is there to a license fee?
Well, I mean, I think that's a very interesting point. And if we're going to have a debate, which we will have over the next few years, about whether we should have a license fee or not, that should be one of the key things. The advantage of the license fee is that it does protect the BBC against commercial competition, commercial pressures, I should say. It has a guaranteed level of income, it knows how much money it's going to get over a certain period of time, and that allows it to take risks and to invest in original programming and to do all the sorts of things that we would like it to do. The danger for the BBC is if it doesn't perform to our expectations, if it doesn't do those things that we expect it to do. You mentioned the Army Covenant, we could call it the Broadcasting Covenant. If that's broken, then the BBC is in danger of losing its own battle. And I'm a supporter of the BBC. I'd like it to continue to take risks and to be an independent voice and a voice for Britain around the world. And I think the licence fee provides a very effective method of funding to do that. The trouble is, if the BBC doesn't do what we expect it, then it's in danger of losing the argument.
Okay. Audience member in the glasses, yeah.
Isn't it obvious that the quality of programme making will suffer with the recent cutting back of staff? It's been estimated that staff are working up to three times harder to produce the same content.
Okay, yeah, Yvonne Ridley, you can answer that question for me.
Well, yes, I mean, I do have a lot of colleagues in the BBC. The cutbacks are destroying the morale in turn. That is affecting the quality. And it was interesting that Gerald was saying that for news content, people are switching over. I personally would like to be able to rely more on the BBC, but I do go into other news sources because they are just not up to scratch when it comes to breaking news. And this is because I believe that they're under so much commercial pressure that they're axing, trying to save money here and there, and they're destroying a good quality product.
Martin Buckley?
I think it's very hard, actually, to draw a clear line between these things and to say that they're under commercial pressures here, jobs are being axed there, programs are suffering, fewer stories are being broken, quality... I don't think you can actually draw that line clearly at the moment. There's a whole lot of different things going on here. I spoke to a friend of mine in the BBC newsroom just a couple of days ago. I said, what's it like now working in this new world where you're all going to be making television programs, radio programs, online? What's that like? How do people feel about that? She said, we're quite excited about it. And we do feel that there was duplication of jobs. And I was already ready for her to come out sort of screaming and saying, oh, it's the management again, they're destroying it, they're not there. No, she's saying we do think there was duplication. We do see opportunities here. We see all sorts of synergies between these different services and these different ways of broadcasting
news. Does anyone
news.
Really use a word like synergy?
I thought that was the only sort of word they use in the BBC.
Okay, question here from the audience member in the aisle. Yeah, that's, with your hand up,
My question is, hasn't the BBC always been under fire from both the left and the right in the past? And if they are, then I think that they're doing something right. You've got the politicians on one side, and you've got the commercial broadcasters like David Ilstein on the other side, always sniping away at the BBC. My question for Gerald Howarth is that you state that you prefer Sky News to the BBC. The BBC Trust are actually answerable in this country. Who is Mr. Murdoch answerable to?
Well, Mr. Murdoch is answerable to his shareholders, but the Sky News is answerable to us, the British people, and his views. Well, it is, because if we don't watch it, no advertisers will give them the money, and therefore they're in trouble. And so, I think that you have to take that into account. But can I just go back to your first point? Because this, of course, has always been the BBC's argument. Mr. Howarth, you accuse us of having a left-wing bias, and do you know the Labour Party accuses us of being having a right-wing bias? Well, we must be doing something right, mustn't we? And actually, that has been really blown apart in a recent report which came out in the summer from, I think it was John Bridcutt it was, Martin will confirm whether that's right or not, where I think that this has been exploded. And I refer back to what Andrew Marr said about the innate liberalism. And then also to what Jeff Randall says, one of the most celebrated economic journalists now, and he was the business editor of the BBC, and he said it was like going into a Sunday morning meeting of the Flat Earth Society, where everybody's saying the Earth is flat. And if you went in and said it was round, they all accuse you of being an extremist, because there's not been the critical faculties brought to bear in an impartial way, because they come from a particular viewpoint.
Okay,
that's my point.
Ridley, let me read you this quote from Andy Marr, the former political editor, in the Mail last year. He said, the BBC is not impartial or neutral. It's a publicly funded urban organisation. It has a liberal bias, not so much a party political bias, better expressed as a cultural liberal bias. Do you buy that?
Well, I don't believe that the BBC has to be impartial. I mean, this desire for journalists to be impartial, I don't see where that actually...
It comes from the charter, Yvonne.
That actually comes from.
It comes from their charter.
There is no way, if you're covering a rape trial, you would give the rapist equal measure to the rape victim. You cannot be impartial
again, shows that nonsense that you're talking. You have to. If you're reporting a court case, you have to report equally the views of either side. Otherwise, you can be hauled up in front of the judge and sent to jail. So that, you know, Yvonne, you've got to get your facts straight here.
Well,
I mean, I think that the idea, the whole idea of impartiality is a very difficult one, because I think what Andrew Marr was saying is probably right, is that there is a sort of cultural bias, and it's a bias towards the broader culture of the country. I don't think that's particularly a bad thing. Other people might say it is. Impartiality is different and is more difficult because, as we found, particularly as this country has become more diverse, that one man's impartiality is another woman's bias.
Okay,
I would agree. Can I would agree with Andrew Marr and with you, actually. There is a slight cultural liberal bias in the BBC, undeniable, it seems to me.
Is that a bad thing or not?
Well, I'm just saying it's there, and I'm agreeing with Gerald.
But I just wanted to put in a word in
defence of the BBC against Sky, if I might, because I think Sky is running a slightly more lowbrow, more tabloid news service, and that will grab certain kinds of viewers. I think the BBC is trying to hold out for slightly fewer celebrity-based stories and so on. Perhaps the blokes in the...
Ruth Appleton, you asked a question to set this all off. What do you think?
Well, I think that if you're talking about liberalism, what do you compare it against? I mean, you know, who's going to measure what is liberal? Are we talking about other sides of the world liberal, or British liberalism, or... you know, or Lib Demism, or, I mean, what is liberal? What's the word mean? And actually, I think that what the BBC should be representing is accurate broadcasting, not whether it's liberal, conservative or anything else. It's accurate broadcasting. And I would like to ask Matt Wells what he meant when he said that Andrew made a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. He was accurately broadcasting.
He didn't. I don't know if we want to go into all of this, but we can if you like. But we didn't report his source 100% correctly. The question is, should he have lost his job over that? I don't think so. I've reported sources incorrectly in the past, and I didn't lose my job. Now, you can say the broader point of the whole story about weapons of mass destruction ended up being true. That's right, but that was not what the story was about at the time.
Okay, another question from the audience there. Yeah.
If your journalists were held to the same standards as Andrew. There wouldn't be another. Well, there wouldn't be a print journalist left in the land.
I completely agree.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I've got some support in the audience. Someone who doesn't. Anyone who wants to have a go at me?
He wants to come back next time.
All right. Gentleman in the aisle of the blue shirt there.
Yes, please. When I was in America in the 70s, even there, the best minds and the student movement there, they admired BBC, strangely enough, and I agreed. But when I came here during the Thatcher years, and especially the New Labour, and the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the rest, I think that impartiality is lost. I will give you an example. I never heard about, for example, the non-aligned nations. They count nearly more than 130 people. Non-aligned nations came together last year, exactly. Last year, they voted unanimously that the Middle East should be devoid of nuclear weapons.
Okay, but
and Iran signed it too. But we never heard about it.
Martin Buckley.
And this year,
I've got to cut you off. Martin Buckley, your answer to that point.
Well, I just said the non-aligned movement is one of the most ineffective political movements in the history of political movements, sadly. You know, I do think, we're on Press TV. Isn't it fantastic that this voice is now here? What have we recently seen? Al Jazeera, very, very good. Some people, actually, in the Arab world don't like Al Jazeera. They think it's too full of ex-BBC people. They think it has too much a liberal, cultural, Western agenda. But it is marvellous that we're moving into this modern media landscape where so many new alternative voices can be heard. That can't be anything but great for viewers and listeners all around the world.
The original was created because the Arab section of the BBC was closed down. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was brought about through government pressure piled on from Saudi Arabia.
It's starting it all up again now. But the point that you made about America is an interesting one, actually, because if you go to America, they're all fed up with the right-wing bias of their news, and the BBC is selling its bulletins to radio news organisations all over America, where you can hear BBC News bulletins now, and BBC World has just started a nightly news show in America, and American viewers are turning to the BBC in droves because of the bias.
It's incredibly hard to get quality news in America on television, incredibly news. In fact, American viewers are disenfranchised in a democratic political system by the paucity of good quality news coverage that they have access to.
Another question from the audience, guy at the front there. Yeah, right at the front, yeah.
I'll first highlight Andrew's question, which he asked the audience, like if the cultural biasness of BBC, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I'll come back to the end, like when I finish. I've got two questions for BBC. First one is...
Just give us one, all right? I only want one question per person.
Okay. Like, I would like to know, what is BBC doing, like, in its programming, besides, like, the recruitment, in its programming, like, to kind of reflect the ethnic minority? And also, when it's now come to, like, his point of, like, whether the cultural biasness in this diverse community with all the critical current affairs we have of, like, I'll mention a few, like, Islam, Muslims and stuff. Like, is BBC doing anything to kind of put all the problems that we have in Britain,
okay,
like cultural
diversity? We've done
diversity.
The first one of those questions. Let's take the second one. Yvonne, you had a go at the Islamophobia, as you called it, newsman. Tell me, do you think the BBC is reporting the Muslim community fairly in this country?
No, not at all. And one of the main reasons it's not doing that is it has a shortage of Muslim journalists. And you go into any newsroom in the BBC, you'd be very hard pushed to find any woman wearing a hijab. And I was in Saudi Arabia last year for the Hajj. The journalist who they had presenting the Hajj, the 4 million people performing this annual pilgrimage, was a secular Muslim. And she was the only woman out of 2 million female pilgrims who was showing her hair and wasn't wearing her hijab correctly. Now,
okay,
you
well,
might
let me
think that's insignificant,
okay,
but it's not. It's offensive to Muslims.
Isn't Newsnight, for instance, just doing an ordinary job of reporting an important issue in this country, which is the rise of militant Islam?
Well, yes, but the journalists that are doing it are coming at you with an Islamophobic streak. I don't know what on earth is into Newsnight, but the way that it is tackled, and it has apologised, to be fair to Newsnight, when it's for some of its coverage, the way that Newsnight has been tackling so-called radical Islam is frankly stunning. For Muslims, it's really offensive. It's obvious to us when they're making huge mistakes. But to non-Muslims, they're sitting there, they're listening to a lot of this rubbish. Whenever radical Islam is mentioned, Anjan Chowdhury from Al-Majrun is on. He barely represents 20 Muslims out of 2 million Muslims in Britain.
I disagree fundamentally with Yvonne over this, because first of all, she mentions that the number of Muslims in this country are a small proportion of the country overall. That's the first point. The second point is, this is a matter, Yvonne, of huge, huge importance to the British people, to ordinary people going about their daily lives, and they are being subjected to murder. And the common factor is that the people who have been carrying out these murders are Muslims. That is an undeniable truth, and it is absolutely right and proper that we address this issue, and above all, that the BBC addresses this issue.
I'm going to go back to the audience. Anyone who hasn't spoken yet wants to speak. Anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Gentlemen, with a tie, that's it.
The BBC...
No, I want you to respond to this particular point.
No, it's a different subject.
Okay, anyone who wants to respond to this particular point. Yeah, gentlemen at the end.
Yes.
There.
To what is Mr. Howarth referring when he mentioned that Muslims are responsible for murders or for the deaths of British people? To what exactly are you referring?
It's a common factor. It's been a common factor in these terrorist atrocities that the people involved were Islamic fundamentalists. That is a fact. And you cannot get away from it. And we need to understand why. We need to understand why these people, despite being brought up in this country, despite our liberal society, have chosen, some of them without even telling their own families, to take the lives of innocent people in a fashion which is wholly alien to us.
Let's have Matt Wells.
I think that Gerald Howarth chose his words rather badly. But I think that Yvonne is being disingenuous as well. If she thinks that most Muslims aren't also concerned about the rise
of radical
Islam, aren't they? So shouldn't that be investigated?
All right, here's the point. Yeah. Isn't the BBC just a receptacle for all our broader arguments about this kind of thing? I mean, that it just becomes a surrogate for the arguments we're having about actually questions which aren't really very much to do with the BBC. Would anyone agree with that, Martin Buckley?
Yeah, I think that's rather a good point, Andrew. I couldn't have put it better myself. I don't know how much time we have, and I just wanted to come back and defend the BBC a little bit. I know I have a lot of Muslim friends, especially younger Muslims, or third generation Muslims, who don't have any of the kinds of problems with the BBC that you have. Although I do know Muslims, some Muslims, perhaps more traditional Muslims, who do feel the way you do about some of the Newsnight coverage. I wanted to say, incidentally, when I joined the BBC, my first boss for 18 months was a Muslim, who had himself been brought into the BBC by a Muslim. I can tell you that the BBC actively looks very hard, continuously, at recruiting people from all the ethnic minorities.
It's very difficult.
All right, last question. We've got three minutes to go. Cards on the table kind of question. It's from Gavin Davis, who's an MA student, presumably not the same Gavin Davis who was once the chairman of the BBC. At least I don't believe so. Gavin Davis, your question.
With the BBC becoming more commercialised, competing with other media corporations and other independent media ventures, is it time to abolish TV licences? And would the panel like to comment on rumours that the BBC is lobbying to extend licence fees to computers with broadband networks?
OK, cards on the table. Time. Is it time to abolish TV licences? Gerald Howarth.
Not yet, but I think that we could well be approaching that stage and the challenges to the BBC to show that it is different and that it can claim a legitimate right to tax the people, which none of the other broadcasters can. And I think that means that they ought not to be necessarily chasing ratings, that they ought to be looking at news, perhaps in a different way from other
Martin
broadcasters.
I sort of think that it's inevitable that this will come. But I do say to everybody, we are in danger of losing something very precious. I think I'm right in saying it costs us less than the price of a daily newspaper for everything that the BBC offers. All those channels, all those digital channels, all that online material, all that other stuff, access to arts events, sports events, all of that for less than a price of a daily tabloid. Do we really want to throw that away?
I'm a great supporter of the licence fee. It's the least worst option to answer. The second point, it is already against the law to watch the BBC on broadband computers without a licence, so they've won that argument already. I hope the licence fee isn't abolished, but I think unless the BBC makes the kind of argument that we're making, then it could be in big trouble.
OK, Yvonne Ridley, last word to you.
Yeah. Keep the licence, improve the standards, get rid of government interference and have a broader, more reflective panel of watchdogs cooperating with the BBC.
OK, and from this broad and reflective panel, that, I'm afraid, is all we've got time for today. But if you want to join the debate or suggest another topic for us to discuss, our email address is forum@presstv.co.uk. That's forum@presstv.co.uk. So don't forget, you can send in anything that you think you want us to discuss. See you next week on Forum.